Okay, so now we are definitely getting into some realms where I really don't understand it very much, but we're going to talk about some of the power and the limitations that Congress has underneath the Reconstruction Amendments. The Reconstruction Amendments are specifically the 13th, 14th, and 15th. We're going to be focusing on two parts, and then I'm actually going to tie in the 11th Amendment into this section as well. But our one part of the amendments and the Reconstruction Amendments that we'll focus on is Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. Hard cases to understand. I'm going to try and simplify it. I may fail miserably. I'll let you know if I feel like I'm failing miserably in simplifying it. But ultimately, we'll get there in the end. And then we'll talk about the 11th Amendment as well, as I mentioned. So let's start with Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. We have three cases, South Carolina versus Katzenbach, and Katzenbach versus Morgan. And then we also have City of, I'm going to say Bourne, versus Flores. Okay, let's start with South Carolina versus Katzenbach. And Katzenbach versus Morgan, they're really based off of the same statute that was passed, or at least similar statutes, where the federal government said you cannot, states are not allowed to have literacy tests in order for people to vote. South Carolina versus Katzenbach, the court ruled that states could have literacy tests if there was a good reason for it. But Section 5 of the 14th Amendment does allow the government to enforce provisions. So here, the federal government did create a law that had a formula. And the formula here looked at states that had literacy tests and looked at states that had a very low voter turnout. And if, in minorities. And if there was a correlation between the two, well then, those states would have to get permission from the federal government in order to change polling locations, or they would have to get approval for their literacy tests just to make sure that it was not having a disparate effect on minorities. And so that was the biggest thing with South Carolina versus Katzenbach. It is important to note later that in a case called Shelby, the court disbanded, you can say, this formula that was created here in South Carolina versus Katzenbach. In Katzenbach versus Morgan, it just does away with literacy tests completely. This was, I believe, a literacy test in New York. It had a good reason for it in the sense of we want voters to be competent. We want to make sure that they're well-informed. That way, our legislature is strong. The dissent in this case argued, the majority in this case argued, though, that any other speakers can be competent in the legislative process, in the voting process. And because there was a good reason for the statute, Congress's statute overruling the literacy tests, well, then it is constitutional. So there's two main reasons why the court allowed this disbandment of literacy tests to stand. The first is because they wanted to provide a remedy for arguable violations. So that is, we want to solve the issue of having a disparate effect on minorities. Second, that Congress can make substantive interpretations that goes beyond the court's authority. So the court in this case was saying that they did not have the authority to go against Congress's power. And so that's what happened there. We have City of Bourne versus Flores. This was a case related to the Religious Freedom Reformation Acts, which is abbreviated the RFRA. What happened previously is that there was a case in Smith where a Native American tribe, as part of a religious ritual, would smoke peyote, I believe is the name of the drug. And it was against the law to smoke peyote, and so they were charged, and the court said that it was against the law, and there was nothing that they could do to overturn their convictions. And so Congress went and passed the RFRA to expand religious freedom, so that if religions were burdened, well, then the court would look at these cases with strict scrutiny, meaning they would look at the statute and say, is this a compelling reason, and is it having minimal discriminatory effect? And if either of those parts is not met, well, then the statute must stand. Sorry, then the statute must fail. So the people who had the RFRA argued that this broadened the rights of religion, and this fell in a similar line with Katzenbach versus Morgan, because, well, you're just simply broadening access, making it better for people who were discriminated against. But the majority disagreed, and they said that Congress has the power to enforce the Constitution, not interpret the Constitution. And in this case, they were trying to, the Congress was trying to enforce or recreate a new constitutional provision. Congress is not allowed to rewrite the Constitution, and it gives two parts to determine whether or not Section 5 of the 14th Amendment applies. It needs to be congruent, and it needs to be proportional. So there's this congruent and proportionality test. I don't really understand exactly 100% how the congruent and proportionality test works, but I do know in this case that there was a proportional problem. And the reason for that is because religious people are not as often discriminated against as minorities are. And so it was not as proportional to the law. The law was not needed to resolve this issue that Congress said was currently going on. So our two takeaways is that, one, you cannot change the Constitution. You can only create laws to define the Constitution. And second is we have the congruent and proportionality test. So that's Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. The 11th Amendment limits congressional authority. So if we look at the plain language of the 11th Amendment, it says that a citizen is not allowed to sue a state. So a person from Iowa cannot sue Iowa. A person from Iowa cannot sue Utah or Florida or California or any other place. However, this has not been the case. There have been several exceptions to this rule. You can say that these are legal fictions because they're not written into it. They've just been, so to speak, read into it. And the following exceptions are these legal fictions. You can sue somebody in their individual capacity. So if you want to sue the governor of Iowa, you can say, I am suing the governor of Iowa in their individual capacity. Or same thing with the governor of Utah, Florida, California, New York, wherever it may be. Sue them in their individual capacity. If they're sued in their official capacity, well, then it is suing them in violation of the 11th Amendment. Another way that you can sue a state is if the state consents to being sued. This does not happen often, but they want to be seen as the nice guys. The third way that you can sue a state is if there is abrogation, which abrogation just means to nullify. So a good way of saying this is if you sue a person underneath Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, well, then the 11th Amendment does not apply. Section 5 of the 14th Amendment is the only section that abrogates or nullifies the 11th Amendment. And the reason for that is because it comes after the 11th Amendment, meaning it was passed after. And the person who is the plaintiff needs to be a person of a subset class, which is typically minorities or gender differences as well. Once upon a time, you could sue underneath the Commerce Clause, but that is no longer the case with a case called Seminole Tribe of Florida versus Florida. And then finally, the fourth legal fiction is that you can obtain an injunction against the state, which is not suing for damages. It's just saying, I want the state to stop engaging in this, so to speak, illegal activity. And that is the power and limitation underneath the restriction amendments. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro, and you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.